Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, Assistant Professor of Communication and Media at Lund University. Remember, you can follow the show on Twitter at SMNPPodcast or visit us on the web at socialmediaandpolitics.org. All right, y'all. Thanks so much for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to be talking about what research says about the role that social media influencers can play in affecting citizens' political behaviors and also their perceptions of politics. So if you remember, about a year ago, we did an episode on political influencers from a campaigner perspective, talking with Madeline Toomey about the Biden campaign's use of digital influencers during that campaign. And now I want to kind of cross-check some of those insights with an academic perspective, where there's been some research in the advertising and branding space, but not so much in political communication until now. And today, my guest is Dr. Desiree Schmuck. She is an assistant professor of mass communication at KU Leuven, and she's really been pioneering studying the effect of influencers on political behaviors and social media users' perceptions of politics. So in this episode, we're going to dive into three of Dr. Schmuck's studies that look at the role of social media influencers and their effect on politics in slightly different ways. So the first study we'll discuss took place during the 2019 Austrian election and tests the link between exposure to political influencer content and the effect on both online and offline political participation. But what's interesting about this study is Dr. Schmuck and her team make a distinction between influencer content that's explicitly political, like voting in an election, versus more issue-oriented, focusing on environment and sustainability. So that study is entitled The Mobilizing Power of Influencers for Pro-Environmental Behavior Intentions and Political Participation, and it's published in Environmental Communication. Then moving on to the second study, instead of testing effects on concrete behaviors, Dr. Schmuck and her team looked at how influencers might be affecting social media users' perceptions of politics. And in particular, is the discourse coming from political influencers simplifying politics? And how might that affect young social media users' political cynicism and their political interest? That study includes three surveys that were conducted in Germany. And that study is entitled Politics Simply Explained: How Influencers Affect Youth's Perceived Simplification of Politics, Political Cynicism, and Political Interest, published in the International Journal of Press Politics. And finally, a study hot off the press that looks at the effect of social media influencers. Can they influence people's perceptions of COVID-19 and their trust in official health sources? That was an experiment, and we'll talk about the difference between experiments and surveys in studying social media influencers. And that study is entitled Responses to Social Media Influencers' Misinformation About COVID-19, a Pre-Registered Multi-Exposure Experiment, published in Media Psychology. So there'll be links to all these studies in the episode description. They're very dense, and so here you'll just get the top line findings. But Dr. Schmuck does a great job in condensing this research in a way that is highly accessible. So without further ado, let me turn it over to Dr. Desiree Schmuck. Again, she's an assistant professor in the Department of Mass Communication at KU Leuven. Dr. Schmuck, thanks for taking the time out and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be here.
So to start out here, I think we all kind of have an idea of what a social media influencer is, but it's such a broad category of people covering a wide range of topics across multiple platforms. So how are you thinking about influencers in your research? Are they defined more quantitatively by having a certain number of followers, for example, or are you looking at them more qualitatively by the amount of influence they might wield on changing people's political attitudes and behaviors?
Yeah, that's a great question. And also an important one, because definitions of influencers in both public discourse, but also in the scientific literature often vary. So regarding your question, I would say that we certainly consider both of these aspects in how we conceptualize influencers, but also a few more. So first, we consider influencers as digital opinion leaders. And the criteria for being an opinion leader were already formulated way before today's influencers even existed in the 50s by Elio Katz. And these were specifically representing certain values having a high number of social ties, and having a high knowledge of or interest in a topic. And we argue that these criteria can be well applied to influencers who have a large network of digital followers on social media platforms. And here, by meaning large, we rely on the usual thresholds that are brought forward in the literature with, for example, at least 1,000 followers being required for a nano influencer and at least 10,000 for being a micro influencer and so on. And influencers also usually build their brand around a topic such as fashion, beauty, gaming, or fitness. So they also represent certain values and have a high interest in the topics they communicate. Yet they do not necessarily have high knowledge of the topics they talk about, which can be problematic because they can also misinform their audience, which we will probably tackle upon later on. Yet the existing research has also shown that the high expertise is not a necessary criterion to be an opinion leader, but that people can also act as opinion leaders when they're objectively rather uninformed about a topic. So these criteria would constitute what makes a digital opinion leader. But in terms of what exactly makes an influencer, and how we can distinguish them from other opinion leaders online, we consider the origin of fame as the most important element. So, for example, while traditional celebrities are usually famous due to their profession, being an actor or an athlete, and their success is mainly conferred by legacy media, although they can, of course, also be successful on social media, influencers have achieved their success due to their self-presentation on social media. And although the boundaries between these actors may sometimes be a bit blurry, we argue that this aspect is actually key in distinguishing influencers from other people who communicate online, and which might also be a crucial aspect that explains their unique appeal. So even if an influencer makes it up to a follower number that is comparable or even higher than that of traditional celebrities or politicians, their trajectory from an ordinary person to being a celebrity can still be seen on social media and can be followed on social media. And that gives them an aura of being a regular seeming, relatable person that individuals nevertheless can look up to.
Yeah, I think the concept of digital opinion leader and the origin of fame are kind of, you know, two nice ways to start limiting down this kind of wide range of people who are considered influencers in mainstream discourse. And there are different ways for influencers to be political, right? On the one hand, there's the more formal political route that deals with traditional party politics, such as urging followers to vote in an upcoming election. But then on the other hand, there's more cause-oriented advocacy around issues, for example, which would seem to fit better with many influencers' focus on lifestyle-oriented topics. So could you discuss these differences in terms of how influencers might be considered political and how they might lead to different forms of citizens' political action?
Sure. That's also a highly interesting point. So when I started to do research on this topic, on influencers' political communication, together with my team at K-Löwe, we stumbled upon the problem to define what exactly even constitutes political content. So in observing the communication of influencers, we saw that they do communicate about what you call formal political topics, which we define as topics that revolve around political processes, actors, or institutions. And a famous example of such formal political communication is how the German influencer Rezo communicated about the topic of the European elections and mobilized young people to vote. Yet we also saw that influencers approach politics in a different way that is more cause-oriented and personalized. So building upon what scholars like Lance Bennett, who was also on this podcast, defined as a shift toward the personalization of politics, we argue that influencers mobilize not only for traditional participation, but rather for personal lifestyle and values to engage with causes such as climate change or human rights. And this is very interesting because not only are these topics that are more prevalent in individuals' daily lives, but they are also the way young people engage in politics, who have been found to be more likely to become active in short-term participation for specific causes in certain periods. And since the audience of influencers predominantly consists of adolescents and young adults, this engagement with what we call lifestyle-oriented political topics is highly interested in terms of the effects it can have on young people. So in terms of how these political topics affect different forms of political participation, formal political topics may mobilize followers for also conventional formal political participation, like voting or signing a petition. But our evidence shows that lifestyle-oriented topics may also do so, but at the same time, additionally impact behavior that is not political per se, but may be motivated by a political motive or a collective concern, like political consumerism, such as buying clothes that have been traded in a fair way. And what is really interesting about that is that influencers can engage with politics in varying degrees too. So it can be their main topic. And if followers follow these influencers, they intentionally expose themselves to these topics. But it can also be that they interweave political topics with their otherwise very non-political content, like lifestyle or entertainment, for which followers usually follow them. And if they then sporadically drop their political opinions about an event or topic they personally really care about, or give voting advice, for example, this may exert a strong impact on the followers who trust them and see them as role models.
Definitely. And I want to get into a study where you tested this difference between the more kind of formal and cause-oriented politics. But first, I want to ask you about this example you noted about Rezo, who the example pops up a couple times in your paper. So could you explain what that kind of influencer phenomenon was in the context of the 2019 European elections? And also, it was kind of cool how it was, they kind of started a movement with other influencers as well. So maybe it'd be good to kind of give the listeners an idea of what type of political influencers we're talking about.
Sure. So Rezo is a German YouTuber who, before the 2019 European elections, made a video that was called The Destruction of the CDU, which was the governing party in Germany at that time. And he was accusing the governing party, but also other parties, of not doing enough about climate change, and also giving out voting advice, not in terms of whom young people should vote, but who they should not vote for. And his video kickstarted another video in which up to 90 other YouTubers also expressed their opinions about this election and mobilized or tried to mobilize young people to vote in the election. And this video received unprecedented attention for an influencer or YouTuber's video, and was also covered by international press, because the turnouts, the voter turnouts in the young generation was higher than in the previous elections, which was later attributed to his video and also called the Rezo effect.
Aha, interesting. So kind of returning back to this idea, the connection between influencers and kind of formal politics and more issue-oriented politics, to kind of test this distinction, you designed a survey during the 2019 Austrian election where you asked people whether they follow influencers who post explicitly political topics such as elections and migration versus influencers who cover environmental or sustainability issues. So could you introduce us to the design of that study in terms of what you were seeking to find out?
Absolutely. So the data for this study, as you already mentioned, came from a longitudinal survey that was conducted during the 2019 parliamentary elections in Austria, which took place shortly after the EU elections I mentioned before. And our interest for the study was sparked by Rezo's communication before the EU elections. And so we used the opportunity of including items in a large survey that was already planned during the election campaign in Austria, with a longitudinal design in the 6 weeks before the elections. And together with my PhD student, Helene de Koning, we used this data to find out whether following influencers who talked about conventional politics before the elections, or who talked about a cause-oriented topic, in this case, the environment and climate change, inspired by resource communication, impacted individuals' participation both in an online and offline context 6 weeks later. And we conducted this study during the election campaign because we deemed the election context as an important period to study these effects. Because participation and also awareness for political topics and processes are usually higher in these periods. So what we did was looking at correlations between following influencers at time one and offline and online participation behavior, as well as concern for the cause-oriented topic, the environment, at time point two, so 6 weeks later. And the longitudinal structure of our data allowed us to take into account already existing levels of participation and environmental concern at time point one, and to explain changes on an average level between time one and time two. We also controlled for other very important pre-existing factors that could potentially impact individuals' environmental concern and participation, such as their age, their gender, education, political ideology, their social media use, but also importantly, their exposure to political information in other channels and other outlets, such as traditional news.
So then you kind of get a nice shot at what the influencer effect might be. So what were the key findings in that analysis? How does following influencers seem to affect citizens' environmental and political behavior during elections?
Yeah, so what we found was an interesting pattern. We saw that following influencers who talked about conventional political topics, like the elections, was directly related to higher online political participation 6 weeks later, despite the control of exposure to other political information sources, such as social media in general, TV political news, or newspaper use. For following environmental influences, however, we saw that this was not the case. There was no direct association between following influences who talk about climate change, sustainability, environmental protection, and participation. However, there was a relationship between following these influencers and higher environmental concern 6 weeks later. So this environmental concern was then again related to higher offline participation, but not with online participation. And we explained this by the timing of the study, which took place also during the Fridays for Future movement, which was at the peak at this time. So overall, it made perfectly sense to us that following environmental influencers would not directly translate into conventional political actions online, like signing a petition or voting offline, but would first raise concern for the specific cause, which can then become visible in more participation behavior if there's an opportunity to act upon this concern, like a protest.
And just to dive, you know, one step deeper into those findings, you ran some additional analysis where you found this kind of reciprocal relationship between online participation and following political influencers. And so I think that's kind of an interesting reinforcing effect. Could you kind of unpack what that reciprocal relationship kind of signifies?
Sure. So we also saw that participation behavior was in turn, again, related with following influencers to a higher degree on that topic. So this also shows that not only incidental exposure to influencers' content takes place online, but that people also intentionally select the influencers they want to follow based on their prior interest and prior participation behavior. So it's not only that the direction of the effect goes into one direction, but it might be like a spiral or a circular effect of those being more engaged and also being more likely to follow influencers who address these more serious political topics.
Yeah, which is super interesting. And I wanted to start out with this study because it tests for a link between following influencers and some, you know, concrete behavioral outcomes. But behaviors are not the only aspect of politics that influencers might affect. So in the next article I'd like to discuss, you examined whether exposure to influencers' content affects people's perceptions of politics. And in particular, you developed the concept of perceived simplification of politics. So could you unpack how influencers might contribute to the perceived simplification of politics? And what other aspects of politics might that perception affect for younger social media users?
Yes, sure. That's a great question too. So indeed, we do not only focus on behavioral outcomes in our research, but we are also highly interested in how following influencers can affect more attitudinal political outcomes like political interest or political cynicism. So together with my former group at the University of Vienna, we developed this concept of perceived simplification of politics. And we argue that the ability to break down complex political topics and processes is a crucial function that influencers fulfill for their followers. However, we argue that irrespective of whether the influencers indeed present the topics in a simpler way than a politician, for example, it is actually the followers' perception of them doing so that matters for their attitude formation. And this perception can per se have direct effects on adolescents' or young adults' political attitudes, but it may also determine how large the impact of influencers' political communication is on followers' attitudes and behavior, which is something we look into in our most recent research.
Yeah, and for this study, you hypothesized that the perceived simplification of politics would increase both political cynicism as well as political interest in young people. And before we dive into the findings, could you outline some of the theoretical concepts underpinning those expectations, as well as how they might change according to one's level of parasocial interaction with the influencer?
Sure. So we embed this concept of simplification of politics in the tradition of two competing theoretical accounts. One is the virtuous circle thesis by Pippa Norris that proposes a mutual reinforcement of media use and political engagement. And the other one is the media malaise thesis that basically suggests the opposite and postulates that media exposure contributes to political cynicism and less trust in political institutions. And we argue that the perceived simplification of politics may be equally multifaceted in that it can have both positive but also negative consequences. So on the one hand, simplification of politics can mean that politics are presented in a way that is more entertaining, but also in a way that overemphasizes trivial events, for example, or the notion of the good guys and the bad guys. And as such, the perception of politics may result in an oversimplified perception that neglects the complex reality of politics. So perceiving politics as simple may stand in a stark contrast to how political processes function in reality. And then young people may attribute this complexity to the political system and think it is failing. So they may think, well, the influencer has explained this topic in such a simple way. Why do politicians not just solve it? Additionally, also the simplified style in which influencers talk about politics may be very modern, entertaining, and exciting for young people, but it may also strongly differ from the way politicians communicate about political topics, which is more abstract and using technical terms. So when young people then compare the communication of influencers and that of traditional political actors, they may find it unnecessarily complex, which may fuel their cynicism. But on the other hand, it's also possible that perceived simplification of politics is something positive, because if political messages are, in the view of followers, easier to interpret, process, and detect, they can also become more interesting to young people. And political interest and cynicism are not mutually exclusive. So while the mainstream political discourse might sometimes be difficult to grasp and process for young people, influencers might explain current affairs in simpler terms and therefore make previously unappealing or unnoticed topics more comprehensible and accessible for young people.
Yeah, it's such an important question. Does this kind of simplification of politics make younger people who maybe don't have such a great grasp of the complexities, does it make them more cynical towards politics, or does it make them more interested in politics? And so you and your team carried out three surveys in Germany that tested these hypotheses, and interested listeners can dive into the specifics of each study by checking out the full article in the episode description. But across these three surveys, what were the key takeaways for how influencers seem to affect users' perceived simplification of politics, political cynicism, and political interest?
Yeah, we conducted two longitudinal surveys and one cross-sectional survey in Germany among young people, that is adolescents and young adults. And across all three studies, we found that those young people who were more frequently exposed to influencers' content, no matter which type of content, they were also more likely to say that influencers can explain serious topics like politics in a simple way. So this finding seemed to be very robust. There seems to be something about influencers' communication that makes their political content appear comprehensible and easy to follow. Yet the findings about the consequences of this perception of simplifying politics were more nuanced. So in the first study, we only looked at direct relationships between perceiving the communication of influencers as simple and outcomes. And there we saw that it only predicted political cynicism, not political interest. However, in the second and third study, we looked at these relationships more closely, not assuming that they would be the same for everyone, but expecting that they would depend on the topic of political communication on the one hand, but also on the follower-influencer relationship, the so-called parasocial interaction with the influencer the followers experienced. And indeed, we discovered that the picture was actually more complex. So we saw that in both studies, a more intense parasocial interaction with the influencer determined whether interest could be stimulated, for example. So only if the followers had the perception that the influencer was directly addressing them and interacting closely with them, they were also more engaged for politics as a result. And we also found that the topic of political communication mattered. So in the first study, we found, for example, that when the influencer communicated about racism in a simplified way, it could spark political interest among followers. And in the second study, the same was true, but for a different topic. In this case, it was climate change. So these differences may be explained by the topics that were actually salient at the time of the study, which were the Black Lives Matter protests in the first one and the Fridays for Future movement in the second one. And both are topics that resonated strongly with young people.
Yeah. And I mean, that rolls very well right into my next question, which has to do with the role of social context, because I think it's so crucial. I think one of the things I really liked about your study is focusing on the different types of content and breaking down the issues, because influencers talk about different things. And so it's a bit of a chicken and egg question, but I'm curious to get your take on exactly the role of social context here. As you mentioned, the Fridays for Future movement and also the George Floyd protest. I mean, do you think that the kind of influence of influencers is amplified when there are these social issues happening? Or do you think that it's the influencers that are doing the job in making these issues more salient for younger users? So it's kind of like, are they capitalizing on existing social issues? Or do you think they're playing a role in bringing awareness about these issues, whether they're protests or Greta Thunberg, for example, to younger people on social media?
Yeah, wow, that's a highly interesting question. And honestly, I don't have a clear answer to it yet, because we don't have specific empirical data on that yet. But our findings certainly show that it seems to be the case that context matters, and that influencers are not equally successful in mobilizing their followers for each topic. And I forgot to mention before, but we did not only see topic-dependent positive effects, but also topic-dependent negative effects, in that for climate change communication, for example, influencer simplification could also spark more political cynicism at the same time and simultaneously to political interest. So probably this is because for the topics that young people then really care about, they perceive the political system failing. And if they then see the influencer communicating about this in such an engaging, simplifying way, they might remain frustrated with the system, more interested, but frustrated. But coming back to your question, I do think that a certain salience of a topic and a strong collective concern for a topic, like after George Floyd's death and during Fridays for Future protests, that these seem to be a precondition for influencers to be influential on this topic. Yet it is also possible, I think, that they set the agenda for a topic, especially for young people and especially for topics that might have been previously unnoticed or seemingly irrelevant for this group of young people. Like, coming back to the RISO example, political events like the EU elections that maybe many young people would not have considered to vote for, but after seeing the video, the EU elections were on their agenda. However, I don't have systematic data on the comparison, like which one is stronger than the other, but I do think it's probably a bit of both. Yet we will need more research on this to be able to answer this with real confidence.
Definitely. But I think it's one of these kind of unexplored questions. But I mean, definitely you're right that there's something happening with the prominence of social context. And so moving to the third study we'll discuss, you just published a study a couple weeks ago examining whether COVID misinformation from Instagram influencers could affect users' attitudes towards the virus and their trust in official health sources. And I think this design is really cool because it's an experiment which allows for a bit more control than the surveys you've conducted. So could you outline the key variables you were looking to test in this experiment and what participants were exposed to with your constructed influencer at Mirabel Martin?
Yes, certainly. So this study was published together with my PhD student Darren Haaf and the former master student at KU Leuven. And what we did here was focusing on one specific topic that was very prevalent at the time, which was COVID-19. And our interest in this was sparked by public discourse about the role of influencers in spreading vaccine misinformation, but also on personal observations of influencers in different countries who actively discourage people to wear masks or who promoted a healthy lifestyle as more important over vaccination to protect oneself from a COVID infection. Although I need to mention that there were also many influencers who did exactly the opposite and followed governmental regulations and gave advice in line with those. But we were interested in this information and advice that deviated from official guidelines, because for the reasons mentioned before, we thought that this kind of communication could have a considerable impact on young followers for whom those influencers act as role models. So what we did in this experiment was to investigate these questions with young female social media users. And as you already mentioned, for the purpose of this experiment, we invented our own influencer. We constructed a fictitious influencer, and we did that to avoid that followers already have prior attitudes toward this influencer that can maybe hardly be changed in the context of our small experiment. But we did this also for ethical reasons, because we did not want to associate an existing influencer with misinformation, thereby potentially harming their reputation. So we constructed an influencer from scratch, which meant that our master students spent a lot of time on picture databases, trying to find images that were externally valid in terms of being similar to the content actual lifestyle influencers in Flanders in Belgium would post. So when we overcame this first hurdle, the second challenge was then to build a design that would account for the fact that usually followers are not only exposed to influencers' content once, but again and again. So we came up with a design that exposed our participants to content of that influencer at 5 time points during 1 week. And we used totally unrelated lifestyle posts at the first time points. And only at the last occasion, we then randomly assigned them to either a condition where they saw COVID-19 related misinformation or neutral information. And the misinformation was advice against wearing masks, saying that there's no scientific evidence for wearing masks as being protective against COVID, for example. And we also measured during the course of the study the prior knowledge about COVID, perceived similarity with the influencer, their perceived expertise, credibility, and other variables. And as outcome variables, we were interested in whether the female social media users would adopt the promoted misbeliefs, whether they would see COVID as more or less risky afterwards, but also whether this kind of communication would make them doubt about the official information they receive from health sources like the government or news media coverage, for example.
Yeah, and I can just say for interested listeners, if you check out the supplementary material, you can see all of the stimuli. And it's very influencer-y, right? Like the influencer is doing yoga poses and in the treatment group saying, you know, healthy lifestyle can prevent COVID. And then in control group, you know, just a non-misinformation message. But there's lots of null findings here in your experiment, which I think is great because the whole experiment was pre-registered beforehand. So could you outline what you found, what you didn't find, and what both of those might mean for influencers' role in health communication?
Sure. Yeah, that's correct. So the main finding is certainly that influencers did not have a huge impact on young female social media users' COVID-related attitudes in our experiment. Well, at least not after exposure to only two posts that contained misinformation by a fictitious influencer people did not know before. But in this context, there were no changes in young women's attitudes toward face masks, protection from COVID, their risk perceptions, and also not their mistrust in official information across the bench. But when we conducted more nuanced analysis, looking at certain parts of the sample, so subsamples, we did see a tendency of higher mistrust in official sources among those women who were exposed to the misinformation, but who indicated to feel similar with the influencer and to trust their expertise and credibility on the topic. So there seems to be a tendency, but more research on this is certainly needed, that these individuals who feel similar to the influencer, who trust them, that they are also more susceptible for misinformation and false communication about a topic. But we explained these changes then in the mistrust in official information by cognitive dissonance, that they thought, well, if I trust the influencer and I feel similar to the influencer and the influencer communicates something that is not in line with what I hear about COVID in the media or from politicians, then I have to adapt my attitudes to resolve this dissonance.
Yeah. And just thinking about it now, I mean, it seems to dovetail with experiments on disinformation and deepfakes, where it's not that being exposed to this misinformation or disinformation just changes your opinion outright, but rather what it does, and I think in your case, if the person feels that they are close to the influencer in some way, what it does is it makes people kind of distrust their existing sources, whether that's online news or offline news. So it's more about like sowing distrust than actually changing people's opinions in this kind of huge effect size way.
Yeah, certainly. That's definitely what we see, because on the actual attitudes, we did not see any changes. We even saw one boomerang effect where participants who had low trust in the influencer's advice corrected their attitudes in the opposite direction, saying that they even perceived COVID a higher risk afterwards. So when confronted with this persuasion attempt, they were resistant, and we even saw that their attitudes grew stronger in the opposite direction. But in terms of sowing this distrust, we do see some evidence for that in terms of lower beliefs in the trustworthiness of what they received from traditional media and politicians. But again, mainly there were no effects. So if we looked at the whole sample, there were no effects of the misinformation. However, we also worked with a fictitious influencer, and our time where they could familiarize with the influencer only lasted 1 week across four time points. So it is, of course, possible that the effects would be stronger in a real life setting where people tend to follow influencers over a long time period and are more heavily exposed to their content.
Right. As with any experiment, there are some limitations, but we've covered a lot of ground here. And I think it's great you're tackling this topic that is so influential, but also understudied. So to wrap up here, where do you think the research on political influencers needs to go in the future? And based on your experience with different methods in studying this question, which design do you think is better suited to answer these questions, surveys or experiments?
Yeah, of course. That's a great question. So first, I think that the specific appeal of influencers still deserves more research attention. We see in almost all our studies that parasocial interactions and the more durable relationships seem to play a role in explaining why influencers are influential. But these concepts also originate from the 50s and were made for mass-mediated contexts. So in the political area, but also for influencers more in general, I believe that the picture is more complex than just parasocial relationships. Because influencers are not just building these asymmetrical, intimate relationships, they also serve as role models for very specific reproducible behavior. And they also give out advice while at the same time seeming to be relatable and attainable. And I think this mix is what makes them such unique communicators. But we currently lack suitable theoretical frameworks and empirical measurement instruments that truly cover all of these ingredients. And also the way influencers communicate about political topics, I think, deserves more attention, both in terms of how frequent does this actually happen? Is it really that a big issue? But also in terms of what is the actual content and the actual style in which they present political topics? And how do they do that in different countries? Is there a cultural difference, for example? So I think we need systematic comparative content analysis that study which political topics influencers communicate and also how they communicate them. And in terms of effects, I love the question you asked about the design, because this is one that really keeps coming back to us and keeps us awake at night, because it's a really difficult one. Because to study influencers in a way that we can really establish causal relationships, that means being sure that the effects can actually be traced back to the influencers' communication, while nevertheless accounting for the magic influencers are creating by their unique self-presentation that is very difficult to recreate in controlled experiments. So once we work with fictitious influencers, followers lack the bond they usually have with their idols. But if we work with existing influencers, it's hard to tell which effects are really due to our experimental manipulation, and how can our experimental manipulation even make an incremental effect there if pre-existing attitudes are already that strong? So in sum, I would say we need comparative research, both in terms of country comparisons, but also comparing influencers to other actors like politicians or organizations, because we often treat the unique, special, stronger appeal of influencers as self-evident, but we actually lack systematic research showing that they communicate political topics more successfully than politicians or organizations. And furthermore, we need a combination, I think, between longitudinal survey research, but also innovative experimental designs that can try to take into account the close bonds influencers build with their followers, while nevertheless allowing to answer questions about causality.
Yeah, I mean, the research that I've mostly seen on influencers is in like advertising and how they affect brand perceptions and purchase intent. But right. It's great to see some research that's bringing that into some more questions about how young people engage with politics and democracy. So Dr. Schmuck, thanks so much for taking the time out and sharing your research with us.
Sure. Thanks again for inviting me.
I've just been speaking with Dr. Desiree Schmuck, Assistant Professor of Mass Communication at KU Leuven. Be sure to check out the episode description to links to the studies that we discussed in this episode. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Social Media and Politics podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's see how things shape up in the next couple of weeks. I might record one or two podcasts over the summer, but also planning to take a little bit of a holiday. So keep an eye out on those feeds to see when the next podcast drops. But until then, I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Malmö. See you next time.